Good afternoon. You are tuned into Juno Afternoon here for Wednesday, the 25th of January, the year 2017. Jeff Graham with you today. We'll be talking to Heather Mitchell, Tom Loker, and Tom Melville about the cabaret, Juno Cabaret, Cameron Perez-Vandia, president and CEO of the Alaska Humanities Forum. We'll be here to highlight this year's awards recipients. We'll talk with Greg Fitch about the Mental Health Consumer Action Network. And Marion Call will be here, the preview of Friday's Canadian Tuxedo Party fundraiser for the Alaska Independent Musicians Initiative at the Hangar Ballroom. Linda Buckley also will be here with the preview of live music. The book signing on Friday.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Some demonstrators in North Dakota are not surprised by President Donald Trump's executive action Tuesday to advance the Dakota Access Pipeline project. For months, people from across the country who are opposing the project have camped near a construction site by the Cannonball River. Gina Neal from Tulsa, Oklahoma, has been at the camp since November. Neal says she knew the possibility this decision would happen, but as she's not packing up to go home.
I'm a passive person who believes in prayer, but I am in a prayer resistance camp. And I believe that we can stand up together and stand strong, but it's going to take a solid unit of a whole bunch of people to draw that line.
Crystal Hauser from Klamath Falls, Oregon, has been at the camp for about 2 months.
We're not here in force. We're not going to be able to physically stop them from doing it. So all we can do is, take our last stand against it and let the world see that, that's what happened, that they let this go through. Yeah, that's really all we can do.
The Standing Rock Sioux Tribes Reservation is half a mile from the pipeline. Tribal leaders say the project threatens water and the environment and has called for a full environmental impact study. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers started the review last week. President Trump signed a memorandum for the Army to expedite the review and approval process. Dallas Goldtooth is with the Indigenous Environmental Network, which is among groups opposing the project.
It's really an attack upon Indian country overall. I think that we really have to rise up as Native people, as tribes, and all the tribes that came out to support Standing Rock to really make sure that we make a stand here to stop this pipeline and to let this administration know that he can't play with our rights. He can't put our ability for self-determination onto the chopping block. I think the initial reaction that a lot of us had is that, this wasn't surprising. We know the writing was on the wall. So it's time for us to really rise up as Native peoples, take a stand, and show the world and show this country that we're not to be messed with, neither are our rights to be messed with.
Supporters of the Dakota Access Pipeline, which would carry oil from North Dakota to Illinois, say it creates jobs and will enhance U.S. energy independence. The premier of Manitoba is being criticized for saying that Indigenous people should not be hunting at night. He says the practice is creating a race war. More from Dan Karpinchuk.
Premier Brian Pallister drew the criticism over his comments about night hunting by young natives, saying they go out and shoot a bunch of moose because they can, because it's their right, doesn't make any sense. He was speaking to fellow members of the Progressive Conservative Party in Verdon, Manitoba. Pallister said night hunting is a poor practice and should end.
It's just not right. It should stop. So what are we doing? Well, we're organizing. We're organizing to bring Indigenous people together and say the same thing I just said to you, because it's becoming a race war.
Provincial hunting rules say Indigenous people have the right to hunt at night where it is safe, but it is illegal for non-natives. Some Native leaders are calling the Premier's comments offensive and damaging to reconciliation in rural Manitoba. Here's Derek Nepinak, the Grand Chief of the Assembly of Manitoba Chiefs.
When the Premier makes a comment about a race war, he's certainly implying that there are, problems with the Indigenous hunting that's happening. And to me, that's what I say earlier on. It adds fuel to the fire. It's provocative, and it's out of place.
Some Native and political leaders are demanding an apology from the Premier, saying to use terms such as race war is controversial. Others say the danger is that when night hunting takes place near farms and ranches, bullets can hit homes and cattle by mistake. Critics of the practice want Manitoba to follow the neighboring province of Saskatchewan and ban night hunting for everyone in certain areas. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. Native American Rights Fund has been helping Indian tribes for over 40 years with critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior with your support for NARF's work. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights. Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 6 minutes past the hour, and you're tuned into June afternoon. Our first guests are Tom Melville, Tom Loker, and Heather Mitchell, here to talk about the Juneau Cabaret activities, which you got two activities coming this weekend.
That's right. Thanks for having us on the air again,
yep,
Tom.
Thank you.
Yep. I mean, Jeff, I'm Tom.
So am I.
Yeah, we're all Tom.
I am not Tom or Jeff.
So two activities, one at the museum and one at your place, the Rockwell.
Yes. Right. Two cabaret events coming up this weekend.
Saturday, our very first in a series, Juneau Cabaret presents the Great American Songbook series. These are composer tribute concerts at the New Museum Lecture Hall, 2 o'clock on Saturday. And we have sixth grade singers. This month we honor the music of Richard Rodgers. And I'm going to let Heather talk a little bit about the singers we're going to have at the show.
All right. So we're going to be having about an hour and a half show. And during that time we'll have Zebediah Bodine, who is a familiar, although young, but very familiar figure here in town. He's done stuff with Perseverance and has done some of our cabaret work. Patricia Hull, who really needs no introduction. Everybody knows Patricia. She's going to be doing some great stuff. Dorothy Kuderbach, who's actually a teenager, and she's done some cabaret stuff. She's great, and it's going to be nice to have a youth joining us.
We're going to have Heather Mitchell, too.
And, yes.
She's right here in the studio with us today.
Speaking of youth.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The slightly less youthful than Dorothy. Heather Mitchell will be there. And LaToya Sharon will also be here. She's here in with her family for a Coast Guard appointment. So we've been really lucky to have her during her time here in June to sing at Cabaret. So we're glad she's joining us for this event as well. And then, of course, we're rounding that out with Taylor Vidic, who is also a local fixture for Juneau singers and entertainers, and we're really glad that she's joining us as well. In addition, we will be having our accompanist will be Tom Loker, will be accompanist along with Luke Weld and with Clay Good on the drums. So it's going to be great. It's going to be lots of fun.
Yeah, it's the music of Richard Rodgers, who is familiar to many people more today for the Rodgers and Hammerstein musicals that kind of dominated in the 50s.
But I'm a Rodgers and Hart kind of
and guy. But before that, he had a long association with Lorenz Hart and wrote a lot of great songs like Blue Moon and My Funny Valentine and others. So a lot of very familiar music and maybe some stuff not quite so familiar, but really great stuff.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Laura Haywood has done all the research about the composer and is going to be our narrator at the show. It is going to be part lecture and concert, but mostly concert. And Laura will talk the first half about the Rodgers and Hart contribution to the American Songbook, and the second half will focus on Rodgers and Hammerstein and then the work he did by himself after Hammerstein died. So it's going to be about an hour and a half with an intermission in the middle. All are welcome. It's pay as you can. The new museum has parking underneath and an elevator, so it is handicapped accessible. Mm-hmm. 2 o'clock Saturday in the lecture hall.
And we should note that that's we're doing this in association with the Friends of the Alaska State Library Archives and Museum.
Absolutely. They've partnered with us to arrange for Juneau Cabaret to use their lecture hall and their grand piano, and it's going to be a great time.
What makes Richard Rodgers' music special? Is there anything that defines the way he uses notes?
Oh, you're getting fancy there, Jeff.
I think it's the melodies. The melodies have lived on through the decades. Yeah. A lot of those melodies have worked their way into mainstream jazz standards that are performed all over the world every day. And then when you look at the later work, those movie musicals, many of those have been translated into a lot of languages – The songs are still played on the radio. The songs get remade and put on albums of standards and tribute albums of their own. And in that second half, we have some great singers interpreting some of these songs. Heather Mitchell, who's here in the studio with us today, is going to do a jazz interpretation of a piece from Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
Taylor Vidick will do one from State Fair and another one from Cinderella. And we're all looking forward to having Dorothy Cooterbox sing us a piece from Sound of Music also.
Mm-hmm. And each performer does two selections?
In this show, they're doing two in the first half, two or three in the first half, and two or three in the second half.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, yeah, there's fewer singers, but more songs per
right.
singer.
And mm-hmm. a lot of the songs are going to be excerpted, excerpts of songs woven in with the narrative Laura Haywood has prepared. So,
And I think in terms of, in the timeline, as far as Richard Rodgers and why he is so successful and so popular and so enduring, is because those, particularly those later musicals, because they became film adaptations, they were introducing the idea of a musical to all of, mainstream America across from coast to coast and everything in between. My parents grew up watching some of those musicals as teenagers or as young people, and so they pass that over to future generations. So just they linger on. I happen to like the Rodgers and Hart stuff, the older stuff, a little bit better, but that's just kind of my own personal preference.
Obviously, films like Sound of Music were huge mm-hmm. hits, and so everybody knew the songs.
Yeah, it was the one and only musical my grandfather was willing to drive the family to New York to see. So my mother has really fond feelings about Sound of Music.
Well, the Rodgers and Hart songbook, I would tend to say a lot of those songs aren't fixed to a show.
Yeah.
They were reused in movies, and they've been readapted and reinterpreted so many times. A song like Tom mentioned, My Funny Valentine, or Isn't It Romantic,
mm-hmm.
has been used many times in many things, where I think the difference, and Heather, would you agree, the Hammerstein work, that contribution, those song lyrics have more to do that move the plot along.
I agree. Really are more tied to those musicals. Mm-hmm. I have to keep reminding myself which shows some of those Rodgers and Hart pieces are from. And even just finding recordings of the original show pieces, they're just not out there.
Yeah.
You can find 50 versions of jazz treatments of them, which is great. But I agree. I mean, you're not going to confuse a song from The Sound of Music with Pal Joey. It's just not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Sound of Music, it lives in that world, just like Oklahoma. You're not going to mistake an Oklahoma song for another show. So I think they do kind of work as a package deal, which is fine. That's great.
One of the other reasons we love doing this thing with the Friends at the Museum on Saturdays, we can tell everyone who comes to this concert about our Sunday show at Rockwell Ballroom. Sunday night, the 29th, beginning at 7 p.m. This is also a pay-as-you-can show. This is our regular open call for Juno Cabaret.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone 15 or over who lines up an accompanist can get on the stage at Juno Cabaret, interpret two songs, and it's a great, great time. This time we have, I think, 10 singers signed up. I brought a draft program here. Luke Weld and I will be the accompanist. Erica Lee is going to sing at the top of the show. We're going to have one newcomer, Brittany McKibben, who's from Juno and recently won the Lyric Opera's Hoosier Diva competition.
Mm-hmm.
Jack Brandt is going to sing, Bobby Mitchell, Adele Lebrecq, a recent newcomer to Juno Cabaret.
Yeah, she did a great job in December, so I'm looking forward to hearing her again.
Maddie Nolan and Derek Grimes, the cabaret powerhouse couple. Myra Calvaugh, another powerhouse, who's a recent transplant from Ketchikan. She's a great, great singer.
Fun entertainer, too.
Zeb Bodine, once again, and then LaToya Sharon will also be singing something from the Rodgers show and something else that she's prepared.
Mm-hmm.
Something much more current. So we look forward to both of these.
What instructions do you give your performers as far as what songs they should sing and what songs they shouldn't sing?
Well, when we talk about Great American Songbook, it's a range of dates from about 1920 to 1960, and there's a list of composers and their work. But it's hundreds and hundreds of songs, so they can choose from there. Also, anything from English-speaking musical theater, even something as recent as a show that's playing now. We've had people sing songs from Rent, and Red, and Wicked, and more current things.
I usually slip in 60s and 70s R&B stuff every so often.
Yeah,
I can get
really.
Something that can be interpreted for a cabaret arrangement, which is piano voice. And we'll have David Shakely early on the drums with us Sunday, and he's a very, very adept drummer and able to just walk in cold and play a lot of these arrangements.
Yeah, he's great.
No, the one on Saturday at the museum.
Quite good.
All ages can come.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And for Barry Rockwell, all ages can come.
Yes.
They have to sit in a special area.
If they come, if they're under 21, they come to Rockwell without a parent or guardian. We make them sit in a designated area. But families are welcome, kids, older people, everyone to both of these shows. And we've had really good houses at Juno Cabaret over the years. And it's a great way to expose younger people to some of this older music and get them singing it and performing it.
Yeah, and a great opportunity, obviously, for people who don't have a lot of experience to get some experience doing that sort of thing. And so it's a training ground in many ways for new singers and younger singers and sometimes old new singers.
It's great for returning singers who used to sing and want to weigh back in, too. And what we see in Juno Cabaret are the ones who do it all the time get better.
Mm-hmm.
The quality is going up because the talent is improving because they're getting the experience working on a stage with a PA system,
mm-hmm.
with a rhythm section, with a pianist, and they're all getting stronger, especially the ones who started as teenagers are now in their mm-hmm. 20s. Taylor Vidic's a great example. She has such a professional sound for a young person,
mm-hmm.
and she keeps getting better. She's obviously making the time to work on her. Craft.
Yeah, well, and I think just being on the stage, you get better at all the stuff that isn't necessarily even musical. You get used to, you know, getting up on the stage, moving your mic stand out of the way, working with the mic, understanding how to cue a start of a piece, having, you know, understanding how to work with your group to end it. So there are a bunch
work
of
the audience.
Yeah, you learn how to work
really?
The audience, to work a small room, understand how to connect. You know, you get over the nerves and you start picking out who your special person is going to be in the audience that time for that song to really connect with. So it really becomes sort of a training ground. It's a very low-stress proposition to learn about the craft, which is pretty nice.
I'm talking with Heather Mitchell, Tom Melville, and Tom Locher about the weekend's Juno Cabaret performances. Could you give us the details one more time?
Sure. Please, Saturday, 2 p.m. at the brand new museum. Its official name is the Father Andrew P. Kashevaroff Building, 395 Whittier Street. The lecture hall on the main level is where we're going to give the concert. It's pay as you can, 2 p.m., Saturday the 28th. The following day, Sunday the 29th, 7 p.m. at Rockwell Ballroom, that's 109 South Franklin upstairs, another pay as you can show given by Juno Cabaret. We look forward to having all your listeners there, Jeff.
Thank you for coming by.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 25th of January, 2017. It's the birthday of W. Somerset Maugham, born in Paris, 1874. His father was a lawyer for the British Embassy in Paris. He became a doctor. Somerset Maugham practiced in the London slums. He said, "I saw how men died. I saw how they bore pain. I saw the gallantry that made a man greet the prognosis of death with an ironic joke because he was too proud to let those about him see the terror of his soul." He was 23 years old, Somerset Maugham, when he published his first novel, Liza of Lambeth, about a working-class 18-year-old has an affair with a married man named Jim, whose wife beats up Liza, who is pregnant and who miscarries and dies. It was a big success, and Somerset Maugham made enough money to quit medicine and become a full-time writer. Went on to write Of Human Bondage, The Moon and Sixpence, and The Razor's Edge, many other books. Somerset Maugham, who said, "To acquire the habit of reading is to construct for yourself a refuge from almost all the miseries of life." It's the birthday of Virginia Woolf, Kensington, England, 1882. Began her professional writing career at the age of 22, at the end of a terrible year in which her father had died. She had had her second major nervous breakdown, the first when she was a teenager after her mother died and her half-sister. This time, at the age of 22, she became suicidal. She tried to throw herself out of a window. She refused to eat. She began hearing things. She had to go to an asylum. Finally, they let her out to go to London for a 10-day visit to her sister Vanessa, and during that visit in London she was introduced to Margaret Littleton, the editor of a women's magazine, and Virginia Woolf began writing essays and book reviews, which she sent to the magazine, and she was paid for them, which made her very, very happy. She was able to support herself with her journalism, wrote her first novel, The Voyage Out, in 1913, had another breakdown which lasted for 2 years. The book finally came out, and she went on to write Mrs. Dalloway, To the Lighthouse, and Orlando. Virginia Woolf, who said, writing is like sex. First you do it for love, then you do it for your friends, and then you do it for money. Here's a poem for today by Kay Ryan, Things Shouldn't Be So Hard. A life should leave deep tracks, ruts, where she went out and back to get the mail or move the hose around the yard, where she used to stand before the sink, a worn-out place. Beneath her hand, the china knobs rubbed down to white pastilles, the switch she used to feel for in the dark, almost erased. Her things should keep her marks. The passage of a life should show, it should abrade, and when life stops, a certain space, however small, should be left scarred by the grand and damaging parade. Things shouldn't be so hard. A poem by Kay Ryan, Things Shouldn't Be So Hard, from the Niagara River, published by Grove Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetrymagazine.org. And by Staples, with copy and print solutions for business, including color copies and presentations, booklets and manuals, signage, and more. More at Staples stores or staples.com. Staples, make more happen. Be well, do good work, keep in touch.
It's 23 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned into June afternoon. Our next guest in the studio from the Alaska Humanities Forum, Christina Barber, Jen Miles, and Cameron Perez-Verdia. Thank you for coming down to the station today.
Thanks so much for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
So tell me about the Alaska Humanities Forum, please.
Sure. Well, I'll just share with you, the Alaska Humanities Forum has been in Alaska for more than 40 years, and we... Really what we do is we work to connect Alaskans all over Alaska through ideas and stories and experiences. And we do our work in lots of different ways. We run a variety of programs, including leadership programs. We run Leadership Anchorage, which is now in its 20th year, and we have a new leadership program coming out called Alaska Salmon Fellows. We also do a lot of cross-cultural work, crossing cultures of urban and rural, Alaska Native, not Alaska Native. So we do youth programs and educator programs to really connect people from across our state. And we also have a really amazing grants program where we invest in artists and storytellers and historians of all kinds, all over Alaska, to make sure that we're telling Alaska's story. And we use those stories, again, to bridge cultures and to really connect Alaskans. So our work is very diverse and far-reaching, and we're always looking at ways for us to be innovative and come up with new ways of engaging with Alaskans. So, that's a little bit about us.
Why are humanities important to Alaskans and people in general?
It's a great question. One of the things that it's really important to me is that the Alaska Humanities Forum has been around as long as we have because we're not peripheral. We're core to this state. And one of the things that we do is we engage people in very creative ways, but we engage people on important topics of our day, topics around our fiscal crisis and climate change and urban-rural divide and language preservation. And we do that through these creative methods. We use art and film and literature as a way of connecting people to talk about these important issues. And today, more than ever, we need people to be engaging in those kinds of things, but we also need to be thinking about who we are as Alaskans. We need to remember our history and our past, but we also need to be thinking about what it means to be Alaskan. And that's different for so many people, but our organization really wants to be a part of telling that story and ensuring that we're proud of who we are and where we've been. But as we're charting our course forward as a state, we need to be thinking about it in that very, very diverse way. So our organization helps to support all of that and to make sure that we're not only addressing the important issues of our day, but we're making sure to do it that represents all Alaskans. So,
when you're meeting somebody for the first time, and I say, and you say, I work for the Alaska Humanities Forum, what do you do?
I'm going to answer that. Why don't you answer that?
Well, this is Christina speaking, and I'm the curator of innovation and contemporary culture. And what I do is I connect visual and literary artists, as well as performance artists, if you will, to opportunities that could be a space for them to express themselves. That could be figuring out a way to connect them with a grant, for example, so that they could realize their work in a way that is perhaps a dream for them, something that they've been working towards. It could also be bringing people together to find a common denominator that helps us understand our human condition, our contemporary human condition. So I love my job as a curator. It's a lot of fun. I really enjoy working with people, and I enjoy that creative capacity that we all have as inside of us. So it's a lot of fun.
Well, and one thing that I would add is that when you ask, what do? The question often comes up, you know, about the humanities. What are the humanities? And the humanities really are the stories of our lives. And what we do as an organization is we tell those stories. We tell those stories through art and literature and film and experiences, and we make sure that we express that. And so that's really at the core of what we do. We bring people together, and we share who we are as Alaskans, and we believe that through that connection and that sharing that we strengthen communities and we empower Alaskans.
What's happening in the humanities world in Alaska now?
Boy, there's a lot going on. As you can imagine, there's a lot of important issues going on. But I would highlight two things. We definitely want to make sure we talk about the Governor's Awards, which is tomorrow. But throughout Alaska, we're seeing a lot of urban-rural work going on. And I would highlight that we run a lot of programs. For instance, we've run a program for the last 15 years now where we help new teachers who are coming into Alaska to connect to the communities that they're going to teach in. And so we bring them there in advance and put them through culture camps and orientations so they get to meet local residents of that community and students and really become connected to the local culture and history of that place so that when they begin to teach in that community that they can really meet the needs of the kids there. And what we found is that through that work, teachers are staying longer, they're more connected to the community, and they're better teachers. So that's an example of some of the work. Another example would be our Second Fridays, which we do each month, where we bring in artists to our space, and we highlight that artist, but we also take the topic that artist is really engaged in. And just recently we had a showing of an artist who did portraits of LGBTQ Alaska Native residents, and we had 150 people at our space, and we had an amazing conversation about the challenges and the opportunities and the community in Alaska. And so those are a couple of examples of things that we're doing right now.
I'd like to touch on your grants program. What kind of grants are available?
So we have annual grants, and we have what we call mini grants. Our annual grants are up to $10,000, and our mini grants are up to $2,000. Mini grants happen throughout the entire year, and so you can contact our office and apply online, and you can do that throughout the entire year for the mini grants. our annual grants, which we're about to announce very, very soon, those are a little bit longer process, and you'll apply online. And our grants officer, her name is Megan, she'll work with you to make sure that you're meeting all the needs of our grant process. But we're really looking for innovation. We're looking for creativity. We want people to come forth with ideas about how to tell their story in the way that they want to tell it. But we have we usually give away about $100,000 to $150,000 a year in grants, both in mini and in annual grants. So we really encourage people to get online and look at our grants program from our website and learn more about it, because we want to make sure that we're creating opportunities for people to tell their story.
And you're in town to talk about the Governor's Award for the Humanities and Arts.
That's right. Do you guys want to tell a little bit about the Governor's Awards?
Sure. So the Governor's Awards for the Arts and Humanities is a partnership with the Alaska State Council on the Arts, Alaska Humanities Forum, the Office of the Governor. And we have an event every year. It will be in Juneau again tomorrow night. There's a reception at 6 o'clock at the SLAM, and then doors will open at 7 o'clock for the awards ceremony at the JAC. And it's open to the public. You can buy tickets at the door still. It's really a chance, an opportunity to honor and recognize artists, historians, Alaskans who are making a difference around the state through the arts and the humanities. And so it's a chance to recognize eight awardees. I guess we have 8 awardees this year in different categories.
We have time to announce the names if you want to now. We'll wait until tomorrow night.
We can announce them now. Do we want to give a preview of what we'll... Mm-hmm.
Well, we're very excited for the upcoming State Writer Laureate.
No, go ahead.
Ernestine Hayes.
Yeah.
Which is a 2-year tenure, and Frank Seuss and Margot Klass are here to pass the torch to Ernestine, and we're just over the moon for this particular... chance for the literary community throughout Alaska to engage with her work. Insofar as the humanities, we have some wonderful awardees this year for the Distinguished Service to the Humanities. Robert Banghart, who's a local Juneau, probably a friend of yours, I'm sure, and those listening.
Friends of a lot of people.
He will be there. Hopefully you all will too. Heather Lend.
Lendy,
from Haines, Alaska. And because I know this is short, Shirley Springer Statton will be there from Anchorage. Robert Sparks from Kenai, which is very exciting. Marilyn Davison from Kodiak. Lainey Hoch from Klukwan, Alaska. And then for the arts, Alaska Native Arts, Kathleen Kendall from Fairbanks. For the individual artist, we have Lance Peterson from Homer, Alaska. And we're very excited for the Lifetime Achievement in the Arts, which is Charlotte Fox, who I'm sure you also know very well, coming up from Anchorage. And that is our roster.
It's going to be a great show. And just a quick thing to add, the performers are going to be amazing. We have some amazing artists and storytellers and filmmakers. One person in particular I want to highlight, Bree, is a hip-hop breakdancer, and she will be performing at the event. And she travels all over the country competing, and she is absolutely amazing to watch. And so it's not to be missed. It's not something you've probably never seen before, and it'll thrill us, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. And that's Bree McMillan.
Yeah.
All right, thanks so much for coming down to the station. Christina Barber, Jan Miles, and Cameron Perez, Rendia. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you so much for having us. Thank you. Hope to see you tomorrow night.
37 minutes past the hour, and you're tuned in Juno Afternoon. Our next guest in the studio is Linda Buckley, who's here with a preview of some music that could be played on Friday, sort of a book signing by Kathleen Dean Moore. Thank you for coming down to the station.
Hey, you're welcome, Jeff.
So tell me a little bit about Kathleen Dean Moore, please.
Well, Kathleen and I met in Tenneke, where she and her husband have a summer cabin. She's a professor at Oregon State, a retired professor. And she's written several fabulous nonfiction books that I've read, Great Tide Rising, Wild Comfort, a lot of things that are inspired by nature, but that address other issues. And this is her first novel, Piano Tide. And the reason she asked me to provide a little music with it is because it's full of music. And a lot of her books, a lot of her book readings, she has music accompanying. She read some essays at a lecture, and she had a piano player with her. And the essays talked about the loon and the wolf singing in diminished fourth. And so she had the woman playing West Side Story, which is da-da-da, also in the diminished fourth. And it just, you know, it brings it together in a really beautiful way. So she'll be reading, and then I'll have guitar and singing interludes in part of her reading this Friday.
And it's at Hearthside Books.
Yeah, 6 o'clock in the Valley. And the reason this the title Piano Tide is because in this small village that she talks about, Good River Harbor, you know, this fictional place, they need a high tide to get the piano up the beach. So she calls it the Piano Tide. And it's just the quirky characters. And she sent me a little blurb that says, in Piano Tide, we're introduced to the father of the town, Axel, who has made a killing in the remote Alaskan harbor by selling off spruce, cedar, herring, and halibut. But when he decides to export water from a salmon stream, he runs headlong into Nora Montgomery, just off the ferry with her piano and her dog. And so that's the clash between two people. And yeah, so she said it's a radical extraction and mutual sustenance, you know, that kind of dynamic.
How about a little sample of some music?
So one of the songs that's in the book that's sung by some of the people actually is All I really need is a song in my heart, food in my belly, and love for my family. Well, all I really need is a song in my heart, love in my family. Which I just looked on YouTube, and that's a rappy song. And when you look on YouTube, it's a bunch of kindergartners and preschoolers singing it. And it's a song that's, you know, these townspeople get together and they have musical parties. And so the right wing and the left wing forget about all that when there's music involved.
And I want to thank you for coming down to the station. Give us a little preview of the music that will be happening Friday at 6:30,
6 o'clock.
6 o'clock. Then.
Hearthside Books in the Valley. Thank you. It should be fun.
I returned from combat duty in a wheelchair, but it turns out many apartment buildings can't accommodate me. I fought for freedom and thought I'd be free to choose where I live.
After the phone interview, we assumed the apartment was ours.
But when we showed up, the manager said no longer available.
The only way to stop housing discrimination is to report it. If you've experienced housing discrimination, call Alaska Legal Services at 855-679-3247 or go to fairhousingalaska.org.
It's 42 minutes past the hour and you are tuned in to June afternoon. Our next guest in the studio is Greg Fitch from the Mental Health Consumer Action Network. Greg, thanks for coming down to the station today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So can you tell me what the network is all about?
Well, we're a network of mental health consumers organized for a voice and change in the system. I started the organization myself. I'm the founder about 9 months ago. We're receiving overwhelming support in the community. We're a grassroots movement for mental health, and it's about getting the message out for our needs and our and stigma and just getting in, you know, our message across. You know, we're just people and, you know, just out doing our, you know, trying to be involved and speaking up and, you know, better services for the state and things we need.
About how many members do you have?
We're at about 50 at the moment. That's very good. And I'd like to announce right now we're having a membership meeting at the Goldtown Nickelodeon Sunday, the 29th at 11:30 a.m. The public is invited. Anyone who identifies as a mental health consumer is very encouraged to join the organization.
Can you give me a sample of some of the mission statement?
This is a very good mission statement. The voice of the consumer shall be heard. Very important. We're forming a collective voice again. That is exactly what we're trying to do. We're trying to get mental health in the forefront as an issue in the state. And I'd like to just express that we are getting overwhelming support in the state capitol right now. We are having amazing meetings with representatives and our senators, and they're really expressing their, you know, wonderful voice in our organization. We're doing wonderful things with them. We're getting the issue in the forefront right now in the state, mental health. It's very important. The state basically is, you know, I'm going to go ahead and personally say I think it's a little lacking in, you know, some things, and we're working with the state to address that. We're also talking to the Mental Health Trust, reaching out to them. They're very receptive to what we have to say. We're, you know, doing some wonderful things on awareness. And I do, you know, want to reiterate that awareness is very key to the issues at hand that's going on. Mental health is very much a forefront issue in the United States at this moment. We're about change. We're about a positive change for ourselves.
Hey, you have a website?
Yes, I do. Our website is MCAN, M-C-A-N, Alaska.org.
All right, Greg, thank you very much for coming back.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
This is Bird Note. Every summer, 50,000 sooty terns breed on Bush Key in the dry Tortugas Islands off the coast of Florida. Each pair of these graceful black and white birds incubates their single egg in a scrape on the sand. Then they bring back fish and squid from far offshore to feed the young bird that hatches from it. The colony resounds with their calls. Watching the cloud of birds over this tiny island, you are in the presence of amazing travelers. The young terns will soon leave, not to return for several years. They'll travel out over the Caribbean and the Atlantic, many of them as far as waters off West Africa, before returning home. On the wing day and night, they do not rest on the water and only rarely land on floating objects. They even feed while aloft, grabbing their prey from the ocean's surface. On the fly, they also capture fish that have been chased out of the water by predators. In other words, they live in the air for years at a time. Even more amazing, they do not seem to sleep in the same way as most animals. Perhaps they catch a snooze in flight. We just don't know. Some say sooty terns derive their nickname wide awake from the kerwackiwack or wackiwack of their call. Now we know it also describes their sleeping habits. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Support comes from the Alaska Marine Highway, serving the communities of Southeast Alaska. Winter and summer schedules available online at ferryalaska.com.
So 15 minutes before the hour, and you are tuned in to June afternoon. Our next guest, Dan Kirkwood and Annie Bartholomew, here to talk about the Canadian Tuxedo Party fundraiser for the Alaska Independence Musicians Initiative at the Hangar Ballroom coming up this Friday. Thanks for coming down to the station.
Thanks for having us, Jeff.
So that's a mouthful of words there. Could you describe what the initiative is?
Oh, the initiative. It's a group of musicians up in Anchorage who reached out to me. They're taking this trip to Folk Alliance in Kansas City next month, and they really wanted to create this statewide organization to help elevate talent in Alaska, get more recognition for Alaskan musicians, and work on initiatives like getting more Alaskan musicians' music into films and really export music in the way that Canada and Texas and Austin and these other places do. So this is a fundraiser for this trip and to get things started here in Juneau. This spring we want to do workshops on performance, live sound, and publicity. So this is the first thing in Juneau, and seems like a really great opportunity to get our local musicians up there now that the legislative session started.
Is this an uphill battle that you have to fight?
Oh, I don't know. I feel like Alaska has so much talent here that a lot of the infrastructure is here already. We've got great venues. We've got great places to record. It's just kind of getting organized and getting everybody together.
Yeah, I'll say it is hard. You know, once you're up here, you're set. But it is hard for bands to get up here, and it's hard for bands to get to the lower 48 and play. But I think that what we have up here is a great community of folks who will come out and listen to live music more than anywhere I've ever seen in the world.
And you mentioned getting out of Alaska. Getting out and getting your music heard and getting gigs down south is an uphill battle. But
absolutely,
I feel like we're a lot closer than we've ever been.
How do you find your way into movies, soundtracks?
That is not my expertise, but there's a lot of folks up north who know more about it. And during this trip to Kansas City, we're going to come together as an organization and figure out our board of directors, how we want to function and operate. And those guys have a lot more information that, you know, we want to bring to Juneau.
And how many people are in that?
There's about 15 of us going to Kansas City. And this fundraiser here in Juneau is really to spread the word about this new organization and celebrate a lot of our unique local talent, like Goldwing Dance Band, which is going to be playing that night. They're one of our big headliners. Dan's been in New York doing some recording. And then to cap out the night, DJ Alternative, which is Patrick Troll, is going to be spinning some DJ tunes.
If this is an Alaskan focus group, why are you having a Canadian tuxedo party?
Well,
only because Annie looks so good in double denim.
A Canadian tuxedo is denim on denim, and Americana folk country is kind of a huge thing right now. You've got Margo Price on Third Man Records with Jack White. You've got Sturgill Simpson tearing up the charts all over the place, and it's a fashion statement that's been adopted from Hollywood to the East Coast.
What's happening at the event on Friday?
So it's going to be a lot of different musicians doing solo sets, and like I said, Dance Band's going to come on at 10. There's going to be a costume contest hosted by Alex Brown from Alaskan Dames and Lilette, and she's going to have people come up on stage and rock their best denim and Western wear.
What do you think, what are the rules on bands participating, just for any bands who are listening in the audience right now?
Oh, musicians are more than welcome to be part of the competition. It's going to be Best Canadian Tuxedo and Rodeo Queen Awards.
Excellent.
Your favorite sisters, Alicia and Kirsha Hughes-Scandies, are going to be hosting out the entire night. It's $5 to get in with a Canadian tuxedo or Western wear, and $10 if you don't have one.
Have you found it difficult to get your music out there?
Oh, my gosh. Absolutely. It's always such a challenge because there's so much music, and it's so easy to get music. And it's one of the things that I love about being in Juneau and playing in Juneau is that people want to come hear live music, and they want to dance. So it totally changed my music from, you know, having people who wanted to come out and hear music. You want to make music people want to come out and hear. But beyond that, you know, with time that I spend in New York City recording and playing there, it's a crowded world out there. And you just got to do your best to make music that you love. And if you want to hear it, probably somebody else wants to hear it. And so you just keep pushing, you just keep playing, and just keep having fun.
Is there any benefit from being an Alaskan band?
Man, yeah, I think there's got to be. I think I've got to be riding some at least small level of, like, credibility based on the Alaska thing. I hope it doesn't wear off.
Yeah, I feel like there's a certain rawness and authenticity to people who play music here that really shows when you go down south. And like I said, we have so much talent here that you can't find anywhere else.
What time does it start on Friday?
It's doors open at 7:30 and music starts at 8. On the lineup, you've got Rosh McChesney, Daniel Furman of Fairbanks, Erica Berggren, Jacob Picard, Taylor Vidic, Goldwing, and, of course, DJ Alternative. And then at 10:30, we've got our costume contest. And then after that, it's just a dance party with DJ Alternative.
And if you need more information about that?
You can check out the event on Facebook. It's under Canadian Tuxedo Party! ! Type it into your search bar, and there I have a Pinterest board of really good denim looks with people like Clint Eastwood, Rihanna, all over the place.
The question is really going to be, how do you pare down your denim choices for the evening, I think. It's not going to be a question of wearing at all. It's going to be what looks perfect.
Choosing your best pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Annie and Dan, thanks for coming down to the station today.
Hey, thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff.
Dan Gerwood. It's about 4 minutes before the hour, and you are tuned into a June afternoon. Next guest in the studio are Brian Davies and Matt Lillard here from Eagle Crest today. What's happening this weekend?
Oh, we've got an action-packed weekend coming up. So we've picked up a little bit of snow yesterday. It got a little bit wet up on the mountain, and we're looking a little bit wet conditions continuing into the weekend. But we should start drying out, and should look at some great skiing. We've got our 35th annual Learn to Ski weekend coming up, which is for 3rd, 4th, and 5th graders, for first-timers only. It's a free weekend of skiing and riding. It's brought to us by with the help of Mendenhall Auto and Subaru, some great partners of ours. So there'll be approximately 30 to 40 brand-new skiers coming up, and they get treated to equipment and lunch and lessons for 2 days, and it's just a great way to get people introduced to the sport, get some kids out there skiing and riding, and we're really happy to have that for our 35th year. So it's going to be fantastic.
And we're sorry to see you taking off and going up to Vermont.
Yeah, it's very bittersweet. It's an opportunity I've always had my eyes on, so I'll be making that move here at the end of February. But I've had a great run at Eagle Crest. It's a great group of people up there, great community in Juneau, and we'll definitely be sad to leave.
Brian, what's happening in your department in Eagle Crest?
We're looking forward to the change in temperature, hopefully coming probably Saturday now, looks like. Maybe cool down a little bit. We want to keep more snow coming our way. I just want to put a word out there that Juneau Ski Club's having their first GS race this Saturday. So come out and see some of our young adults and young kids racing down the mountain. They're getting ready for a big competition up in Alyeska. And the other thing I want to talk about is Eagle Crest uphill policy, that when the mountains open, we have 3 designated routes, and this information is all on our website, skijuneau.com. But basically, so we don't have opposing traffic. We don't have people going up in the middle of runs. Basically, these routes lead people over to the Mount Troy area, up to our Beacon Park, or to the Mount Stewart area. So, and the other thing is we have a lot of early morning and late night skiers that come up and enjoy the area. Just want to remind folks, after-hour skiing is at your own risk, and that we always have machinery out on the mountain working and maintaining our slopes. And something that's getting more use now is our winch cat. So if you see a lighted sign when you first get to the base area, that means the winch cat's working on the mountain. And the winch cat puts another light out where they're actually at. But the winch cat itself can be more than 3,000 feet away from its anchor. So you have to be just stay well clear of any place you see a snow cat working and or those yellow signs, because it can be very dangerous. We like that people get out and enjoy the space, but please be aware of your surroundings.
All right. Anything you want to add?
No, just looking forward to a great weekend. We've just passed the first third of the season, so we've got two-thirds left to go out of our season, and we're looking forward to a great weekend coming up. So come on up. Come check out Eagle Crest. We look forward to seeing you.
Brian Davies and Matt Millard, thank you very much for coming down.
Thank you.
Thank you.
About a minute and a half before the hour and you're tuned into a June afternoon. But the forecast for tonight, showers, low temperatures around 38 degrees. Forecast for Thursday, rain, high temperatures near 41 degrees. Thursday night, more rain with low temperatures around 37 degrees. The forecast for Friday, rain, high temperatures near 42 degrees.
This is KT.